Funny because as a coach, I know all the things, and I know that if an athlete reached out to me and said, "Hey, this is what I'm feeling," I know exactly what I would say. Like, "Hey, mix up your like, what are you doing for fuel? You know, like, what are you taking in? What have you taken in? Try something different, you know, or add more some, you know, of something in and see if that helps." But I just kind of doubled down and just on the plan, you know, just my mind was like gone. So I'm just, well, I'll just keep going, you know. And it got worse and worse to the point where when I did pick up my pacer, a friend of mine, her name is Emily, by the time she jumped in, we hit about 60 something miles, somewhere in 65 miles, we'll say. We went into an aid station and she was like, it was bad enough. She was like, "You're not leaving until you eat some solid food." And I looked around and it was like, it was funny because I don't normally ever eat like Pop-Tarts. That's not something I eat a lot. But it just stood out to me as like, my brain said, "That looks good."
Hello and welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance, whether you're running an ultramarathon or just living your life. I'm Eric Dieter, your host. I am an ultramarathon runner. And when we trail runners get together, we never know where the conversation might lead. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello, welcome back. My guest this week is Randy Taylor. Randy and I run in some of the same circles. We see each other sometimes in person. He is also a returning guest, coming back for another conversation on the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. It's been about a year and a half since he's been here. And we talk about what he's been doing since then, some of the lessons that he's learned, some of the races that he's run, and that he has gotten deeper into being a running coach. So hope you enjoy my conversation with Randy Taylor.
Yeah,
that's cool. Well, I was going back looking, is like you, last time I think you and I talked was episode 66. So it was probably about a year and a half ago.
And yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
And I think you had just finished Javelina, if I remember right. And
I do think so. I couldn't quite, and I meant to look back, but I couldn't quite remember if that was the first time I had ran Javelina or the second time. I think it might have been, because I've ran it twice now. It might have been somewhere in between the two times that I ran it, which would mean it was like, I don't know if this sounds right, but like somewhere in the middle of 2021. Would that have been?
Yeah, that would have been about right. Cause I do an episode a week. And so that'd be about 64 weeks back. A little over a year. So yeah, it would have been, yeah, that would have put it right in 20.
Yeah,
either 2020 or end of 2021, first of 2022.
Gotcha. Yeah. So maybe it was after the second time I ran Javelina. Maybe so. I ran Javelina twice.
How did you like Javelina?
You know, it's an amazing race. I mean, the difference is that the first time I ran it was, in 2020, and it was kind of the COVID year. So it was like all the fun parts of Javelina, the kind of party atmosphere, you know, there was none of that. So, I loved the course. I love running in the desert. And so that was still amazing. It was my first 100-miler, and I did pretty well, on that first one. So I kind of knew, that I wanted to go back. Through, you know, looking at a few different things, I ended up just deciding to go back to Javelina that following November and run it again. And it was, you know, so that was just an amazing time. I mean, it's a really great, race. The atmosphere there at the headquarters is super fun to come through, and they're, you know, everybody there cheering you on and all of that. So I highly recommend it. Obviously it's super hot. And so like, it can be a deceivingly tough course. I think people look at the profile and go, "Oh, it's not that hard." But I mean, you know, you're hitting routinely temperatures between 90 and 100 degrees in the daytime, you know? And that's a whole different, and especially as dry as it is for athletes, you know, such as ourselves who live in the Midwest and we're used to humid summers, it's a different kind of deal, you know? But yeah, I love it. I went back last year just to crew and support athletes, and that was even, you know, I'm not saying it's more fun. It's a different kind of fun.
Yeah,
different kind of fun. But it was like, it was so fun just being out there and crewing and supporting athletes coming in and getting to see that side of things too. So that was really an exciting time.
Yeah. And the final, coming into the final part of it, don't you run through like a whole bunch of tent? I mean, people set up their shelters and so that's like, yeah, this whole line of people who are there, you know, looking for their people to come through, but also cheering on the others.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, they call it Tent City, but, so there's a lot of kind of the middle of it is set up for like camping tents for people that are like needing to, you know, crew to sleep overnight or people that camped, you know, ahead of time. And then, but on the kind of the path, the trail is a, I mean, you're talking like, last year was probably more than a quarter mile maybe of like crew tents. So like everybody's crew tent, you know, along that way. And it's kind of an interesting loop because it is a loop, but you come in and you go all the way to the start finish line and literally do a 180 degree turn. Mm-hmm. So you have to run all the way through the whole like crew tent row and then flip around and, you know, go all the way back out. So, yeah, so you're getting quarter mile to, you know, quarter mile plus of just wall to wall, you know, people's crew,
yeah,
cheering you on, you know? So it's really, that's really unique in a ultra, you know, like normally you're just so spread out across, you know, large distances that you don't get to see that much crew at that, you know, condensed space. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned the party atmosphere and, Jackass Junction, which is the kind of the turnaround, not the turnaround, but it's the farthest out point. You start headed back.
Yeah. 10 miles out on the
10 miles out on the 20 mile loop. Yep. I mean, that looks like that would be difficult to get going from because of the fact that there's so many people, you know, just, it's a big party. I mean, so it's like you come out of the darkness and you run in and this is big party. They even had disco dance floor.
Yeah, they do dance parties and stuff out there. There's definitely, you know, some beer and probably some like fireball shots and things like that going. So I always, you know, the athletes that I worked with this last year, I was like, hey, like, you know, if it's your last loop and you know you're good on time and you want to spend a little time, but it's like you don't want to get sucked into that too much, you know. Myself, I tend to not spend much time at aid, so it's not too big of a temptation, you know, but I can see how kind of people that are more in that mid backpack, like where you do tend to take a little more time at aid, can kind of get sucked in and you're like, hey, this looks fun. And next thing you know, yeah, you spent 30 minutes and you're like, my legs don't want to run anymore. Yeah. You know, got to be careful. Got to be careful.
Yeah. I ran the Jackass loop, which is only one loop. And so it was like, I wasn't in any kind of hurry at all. So I probably spent 15 minutes there just kind of walking around. And,
it's a good time for sure. Yeah.
The thing that got me is they had pumpkin pie at the aid station.
Oh, really?
And I was like, and I love pumpkin pie. And I was like, this should be at every, this should be every 100 mile.
It probably is a great fuel source for 10 milers.
Yeah,
sure.
I love that. So,
yeah.
But Randy, for people who may not have heard episode 66, I mean, we've got a lot of people who've started listening. Kind of get a little background about your running history.
Yeah, so a little background, kind of the shortened version would be, I was a wrestler in high school and college. So I was athletics and just, you know, running was part of what I did my whole life, but I never trained for running. So it wasn't like it'd be like I'd go out for a 3 mile run every day kind of thing, or I was running to cut weight or whatever it was. So it was familiar, but I didn't know anything about training or doing distance or really even for speed for that matter. It wasn't really until, let's see, I was 34 years old. So there was probably a 10-year period where I kind of fell away from sports and really like kind of daily activity. I wouldn't say I was like really out of shape. I was always like doing hikes and, you know, active, but I wasn't you know, I didn't have anything I was training for. And when you kind of come from a high level athlete, you're kind of like, you know, you're just in this lost space, so to speak. So I talked it over with my wife and I was like, hey, you know, I really want something I can really train for and get myself back into kind of a daily or at least, you know, a few days a week kind of training. And she had brought up, I always said I would run a marathon and I hadn't done it, you know? And so, it was kind of funny actually, because at the time I was like, man, that's the last thing I really want to do. That just sounds terrible. But it kind of checked all the boxes for what I was looking for, something that was going to, you know, be really hard, you know, it's really challenging. And you know, something that was going to require like, you know, 4, 5, 6 days a week of commitment. And so, I mean, I just, you know, decided I would do it. And I printed off a beginner marathon training plan, off the internet. And I was about 4 months out. So about 16 weeks out of the Kansas City Marathon, and went from couch to marathon in about 4 months, which I don't advise.
I was going to say, you probably don't advise that to the people that you're coaching.
No, I don't advise that. And it probably like just, you know, really now looking back, I'm like, oh, that was kind of a preview of the crazy, like ultra marathon, like, you know, just I'll do crazy stuff. And you know, but I didn't know anything. I didn't know any better. You know, and it really after that, so that was like, I ran that marathon right before my 35th birthday. And, you know, like most people that get into running, especially later on in life, you know, there's a couple things that we tend to point to. It's like, you know, especially on the trail side, it's like, well, I just like fell in love with like being out in nature and that kind of thing, which was part of it for me, but it really was. And this is probably what you hear more commonly is the community, you know? So I just like, as I started meeting people in the running community, both on the roadside, but you know, the trail and ultra world is just super close knit. And you know, people become kind of best friends really fast during miles. So, that was for me, like what sucked me in and really what's continued me on my journey, from that first marathon until where I'm at now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I remember your story that you finished the marathon because they handed you the pacer stick.
He did. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I was going to finish. I don't know if I would have finished as quickly as I did. I set out with a 3:30 pace group and, you know, like just being an idiot, like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I told the guy, I was like, I'd really like to run faster than this, you know? And he was like, well, he's like, if this is your first marathon, he's like, hang with me until probably mile 23, 24, knowing that like the Kansas City Marathon has like a 3 or 4 mile stretch there. This is the old course, so it's a little different now, but that's gradual uphill, you know? He's like, hang with me until that point, and then you can see what you got.
Yeah, see what you got. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and, which was really,
well,
really
did you have any basis for saying 3:30 would be your starting point?
I had no basis for that. I literally just made stuff up, and I don't even know if the training plan I had, I might've tried to do a little bit of research to figure out like, okay, if I can do a 15 mile training run at this pace, what kind of marathon might that equate to? Maybe I was starting to do some of that, but really I just was winging it.
Trail running was really in your future then.
Yeah. So, you know, I was really struggling by that point that he told me to hang with him. And I remember there was a girl that was like trying to qualify for Boston or something like that. And she started to kind of drop off the back of our group a little bit. So yeah, he handed me the pacer stick and said, hey, you better nail 3:30 or, you know, or all these other people that are running with this are going to miss it too, you know? So I had the pressure was on, you know, to do it. But it was, you know, it was an amazing experience and, you know, and I've done quite a bit of pacing since. So I've really had the pleasure of, you know, getting people to the finish line, you know, along this journey as well. So,
Yeah. I had, you know, looking at the Kansas City Marathon, I think I ran that one time. I did a half marathon, and that was the first time I saw people with the pacer sticks. And I was like, it took me a bit to figure out because I was, you know, new to that. But they don't have that in trail running. So
no, not so much. Yeah, you're trying to just find people out there and hope you can find somebody to roll with for even a short bit of the time.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's cool. So after the marathon, you how did you get into the trails? I mean,
yeah,
that's, you know, usually that's a story of, you know, somebody finds the trails and.
Right. Yeah. So it was one of those things where I think pretty early on, I did realize that I enjoyed trail running. I enjoyed kind of the I didn't really know yet at the time. I actually remember thinking to myself, I would never run anything longer than a marathon because I just didn't think it was physically possible for me to actually run the race. And nothing against people that do more of a walk jog kind of thing, which is the majority of ultra distance runners.
Right, yeah.
That would just wasn't something I was interested in at the time. And so I was like, well, I'll just do races that I can run, which felt like, you know, anywhere from 10 mile, half marathon, marathon mm-hmm. distance. But as I started getting into trail running, I did realize there's a big difference in time commitment to get out onto the, like to drive to the trail. And then the trail just, it's just slower. So it takes more time and all of that. And my kids were pretty young at the time. And it was, I was just kind of running into these, you know, the times that I had to train, which were either super early in the morning or late at night, weren't working well for trail running. And then, you know, the time commitment. So I kind of just decided there for the first couple years that I was just going to work on getting as fast at the marathon, essentially as fit as mm-hmm. possible. And really push to see what I could do in the marathon. But the primary goal was like, I'm just going to really get some consistency in training and learn about training and really learn about what it takes to become the fastest runner I could possibly be for a couple of years until, and then just see what happens, you know, see if my mm-hmm. schedule opens up a little bit. And so that's really what happened for like, you know, 2016, 2017 and 2018. And then my last road marathon was, Chicago 2019, which happened to be my PR marathon. I basically progressed faster and faster every marathon over that time, but I had started dabbling in the ultra world. I basically started realizing like, okay, I can run 50K. I can, you know, so mm-hmm. I was kind of mixing some of those in the off season. So unlike the marathon runners that typically do maybe one or two marathons, like a spring and fall marathon, I was doing that, but then I was also running a 50K in the off season or, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So instead of going down in distance and really recovering, I was like going up in distance and switching to trail and really messing with trail in that way. And essentially my plan was to switch to trail and ultra distance. Like all along, that was my goal going into 2020. And then obviously COVID took every road race off the schedule for mm-hmm. 2020. So it was kind of an easy transition. You know, there were some trail, like I mentioned before, I still ended up running Javelina. It was a modified, you know, staggered start kind of thing.
Right.
But still ended up running my first 100 miler in 2020. And then after that, I just knew, I kind of really realized that if I wanted to be competitive on like a national level or, you know, as high of a level as I possibly could, it was going to be at those longer, you know, the 100 mile mm-hmm. distance. So that's what I've been working on, you know, kind of specializing in, I guess, for the last couple of years. So,
yeah, that's so, and I had forgotten that you had said that at the last time we talked, is that you had kind of set your goals on getting into the competitive world of trail running, ultra marathons, 100 mile.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, essentially it was, you know, I think my first Javelina I ran around 17 hours. And then the second one was on paper, it doesn't look as much faster, but it, cause I ran around 16:30 or so.
Well, in 100 miles, that's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, you know, but the other difference there is that my first time at Javelina, I ran, because it was a weird COVID start, I ran overnight for the first like 10 hours. So it started at 6 PM.
Okay.
So in some ways, because I didn't run through the heat of the day, it was significantly easier. I would say looking mm-hmm. back, than the following year when I ran it, where I ran the true Javelina, like started with the, you know, with everybody and ran the normal course, you know, through the heat of the day. And so even though I still improved about 30 minutes on the time, I think it was a significantly better performance, you know, mm-hmm. On the course. And so going into last year, 2022, I decided to put 200 milers on my schedule for the first time. Kettle Moraine, which was June, so mm-hmm. kind of beginning of the year. And then I knew I wanted to go for a flat, fast 100 miler just to see like what I could do if I take out the terrain, take out the heat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I had never ran like a cooler weather, like long race before. And so that's how I ended up settling on Tunnel Hill, which is in November. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of my A race for the year. So uh-huh. everything I was doing was really building towards Tunnel Hill.
Well, you got cool weather at the Tunnel Hill this year, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was a little too cool. it was not hot, but it, you know, so you're hoping for, you know, 35 at the start would be awesome. Heat up maybe to 45, mm-hmm. that'd be perfect. But we woke up Tunnel Hill morning with a couple inches of snow on the ground that was not forecasted. And temps maybe around 25, 27. And it really never heated up like past 32, 33. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it doesn't seem like a huge difference, but man, when you start to get below 30, you got to be careful on the other end too, of getting too cold and, you know, modifying right. hydration, nutrition, stuff like that, that I just didn't have experience doing. And so I did end up with a few issues, I think, along the way. But yeah, it was
so good. Your strategy you had going in for those mid temperatures, mid 40s. What did you do, and what should you have done? I mean, somebody else who's in that situation,
good question. What worked for you? So normally I'm the type of runner, and really essentially I just, you know, I kind of approached the 100 miler from the standpoint of like, hey, I'm going to study what the fastest guys do and just try to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not as fast, but like, I'm going to see what they do and try and emulate that. And that's really how I ended up reaching out to Patrick Reagan as my coach, because of Javelina. He's, you know, he had the two or three fastest times at Javelina, you know, and that kind of thing. And so I was reached out to him and just for advice on how to run it, you know, how to run it fast. And so I've just kind of developed like, you know, into a runner that I operate on handhelds. I do mostly sport nutrition, you know, so I've got powder in mm-hmm. my bottles. I use Guroctane, in the bottles, and I use gels, and that's the majority of my hydration and calorie in, you know, kind of protocol. And, you know, and I have like targets for how much fluid intake based on temperature and you know, and around 300-350 calories an hour is what I tend to shoot for. Mm-hmm. And I do the same strategy down to probably 40 degrees. And so there's not a lot that changes other than like, obviously the hotter it is, when you get into that, like really hot and really humid, my fluid intake and my electrolyte intake will kind of go up accordingly. Mm-hmm. So I do mess with that just a little bit, but the plan doesn't change a whole lot from what I'm taking in. What I didn't anticipate, so I was kind of going into Tunnel Hill like basically with that plan, you
right
know?
Yeah.
and then,
well, and if it would have been normal temptures,
normal,
like
it
like
probably
well, normal
yeah,
as
probably
average,
would have been a little better, you know, or a little gone. Bit yeah easier.
That's what you planned for. Yeah,
that's what I planned for. But the challenge is that when it's that cold, I did find myself just not able to take in the amount of fluid that I would normally. And because of that, and I think it was a combination of some other things, some aid stations were super close. So like, it's kind of a classic trap of, you know, I would have a handheld bottle and I needed to drink the whole bottle or three quarters of the bottle. Cause I had, you know, however many calories, you know, I'd have 200 calories in the bottle or something, you know, from aid station to aid station. But some of the aid stations were like 3 miles apart. And so it'd be okay to have a half a bottle, but am I really taking in a half a bottle, or am I only taking a quarter of a bottle and telling myself it's, you know, telling myself it's a half, but it's not really. So I kind of, I think due to the cold and just kind of the staggered nature of some of the way the aid stations were, I was falling behind in calories pretty early on. And by the time I was hitting kind of the 50K mark, it really, I think was affecting me, but in ways that I hadn't, I was basically entering into a kind of a low grade bonk that, that I was kind of unfamiliar with. And I was starting to get dizzy. Like I would notice when I would stop at aid, like the world was like spinning, you know, and as long as I was running, I was okay. But if I stopped, it was like this, like you had just got off a spinning ride, you know, at the amusement park. And that, that progressed, getting worse and worse for probably about 30 miles.
Well, and then you would think, well, just the idea is you kind of rationalize, well, I just need to keep moving.
Yeah.
As long as I'm running, I'm fine.
Yeah,
but you're actually running out of calories, so that actually would make it worse.
And it, you know, and then you get it, you get so far in, and it's funny because as a coach, I know all the things, and I know that if an athlete reached out to me and said, "Hey, this is what I'm feeling," I know exactly what I would say. Like, "Hey, mix up your, like, what are you doing for fuel? You know, like, what are you taking in? What have you taken in? Try something different, you know, or add more some, you know, of something in and see if that helps." But I just kind of doubled down and just on the plan, you know, just my mind was like gone. So I'm just, well, I'll just keep going, you know? And it got worse and worse to the point where when I did pick up my pacer, a friend of mine, her name's Emily, she lives out in Utah, and she flew in to help crew and pace me. By the time she jumped in, we hit about 60 something miles, somewhere in 65 miles, we'll say. We went into an aid station and she was like, it was bad enough. She was like, "You're not leaving until you eat some solid food." And I looked around and it was like, it was funny because I don't normally ever eat like Pop-Tarts. That's not something I eat a lot, but it just stood out to me as like my brain said, "That looks good." So I took one bite and it was like clearly whatever it was, which is looking back now, I'm like, oh, I was just starving. I was just so under fueled that, you know, my brain was like, "Yes, this is what we need. Eat more of that." So I ate an entire Pop-Tart. I might have eaten two at that. I can't remember. But I ate, you know, a good Pop-Tart or two at that aid station. And then basically from there, I was still drinking the Roctane, but it was like kind of on a as I could get it in basis, and switched to like Pringles and cookies and Pop-Tarts, which is kind of normal ultra fuel that you're going to find at aid stations, you know, for the rest of the race. And man, by the time I was hitting mile 70, I really, my mind, the dizziness kind of dissipated and my mind was kind of back in it. And was just, I was good to go. It was just wild that I ran really well through that whole time, which was kind of amazing. So I was still running like 8 minute miles the entire time, but just my head was so out of it and my, you know, and that dizziness. And so, stuff to learn and, you know, there's always something, no matter how much experience, you know, always something you have to learn and take away. And, you know, and part of that I love because it gives me things to, you know, even coach my athletes, you know, I can walk away with a lesson and be able to be like, "Hey, let's watch out for this because this is what happened to me," you know? So,
And if counting on liquid calories, you really have to kind of look at what your liquid intake is. And it is hard to take. I mean, when it's wintertime, I don't drink nearly as much as I do when in the summertime. And yeah, even just in my daily life. I mean, I know it's like I have to make myself drink the kind of water that I need to keep, you know, from, because I'll go for several days and I start getting, you know, feeling, you know, just crampy. And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't been drinking much water.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone's always like, you know, the conversation comes up so much in the summertime. Like, how do you stay hydrated when you're running, you know, in the heat and humidity? I'm like, man, that's the easy part, because I can just slam a gallon of water almost at any given point. My body wants it.
Mm-hmm.
The wintertime is really where it is hard to get in. And like, you know, like you said, it's really easy to kind of just be dehydrated all the time, you know? Yeah.
Well, and it comes up, I mean, kind of like your dizziness. I mean, it comes upon you so gradually.
Yeah.
You know, I go a couple of days in, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I've only had like, you know, 3 or 4 glasses of water a day instead of, you know, 6.
Yep.
And yeah, sure. So yeah, it's easy. And I have to remind myself, and you know, just, this is what I got to do. Yeah. The other thing that kind of hit me is, people don't understand what happens to you when you run that far, and you look at food that you would never consider eating.
And then
and you're like, that is exactly what I have to have.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting, because I just had a conversation. It was yesterday, in fact, with one of my athletes. He's getting ready to do a big 100-miler. And, you know, I was like, man, there is value in going into aid stations and seeing what looks good to you, because there's partly, like, you know, your brain kind of knows like what you need, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. And so whether it's like kind of salty, savory, like maybe your electrolytes are a little low and you need some additional salt, you know, or if it's just a calorie thing, or, you know, maybe it is something that's just really, really sweet and that kind of thing. So in general, yeah, it's almost like everything's on the table when it comes to 100-mile, you know, aid stations. And getting calories in, you know, is a different deal than daily daily diet. So,
but sometimes it will let you down. I was at an aid station, and as I had, you know, normally I don't eat Oreos, and for some reason my brain says Oreos is, you know, those that looks, and I got a, you know, I got a good boost from it, and just 10 minutes later I went through this sugar crash.
that was
not the thing to have eaten.
Yeah.
Need
there's so many factors going on that, yeah, it's definitely not a foolproof plan.
Yeah. So you have taken up more coaching since the last time we talked. I think you were just getting started as a coach last time we talked. And so how did you get, I mean, you know, obviously you're interested in running now as you're helping other people. So talk a little bit about your journey as a coach and what you've learned as helping people out.
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the things, and I probably shared this on the previous podcast as well, but like, you know, even back when I was a wrestler, like I knew pretty early on that coaching was just something that I was really passionate about in whatever way. Basically, I just wanted to teach people what I knew and help people along their journey. You know, in whatever capacity I could figure out how to do that. And that's played itself out in a variety of ways in my life. I coached wrestling at the high school level first, after I had stopped wrestling in college. And then as my boys got old enough to wrestle, I was coaching at the youth level. And then I've done like classes and clinics and stuff like that for all ages, and that kind of thing over the years. I was originally a physical education major and switched at the last minute because teaching and coaching was something that I was like really interested in. I think I kind of bailed because of, I just wasn't sure that I wanted to do it in the kind of public school, arena. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of jumped to a different major like last minute on that, but you know, so even when I was in college, I knew that was, you know, it's something I was passionate about. As I got into running, and, you know, it's just one of those things almost from day one, I'm like, you know, learning, you know, about training, you know, and I'm just the type of person that I'm not going to just go like, oh, I need to just run, you know, here's a beginner marathon training plan. It's like, I did do that, but I'm immediately like, well, why am I running or why do I progress the long runs this way? Or why do I run, you know, need to run this many days or that many days? Or, you know, how do we, you know, what should workouts look like? You know, so I was like almost from day one, like digging in those ways. And as I was learning things, you know, I just naturally share those things with the people that I'm running with, mm-hmm. you know? And I just realized like, yeah, there are a lot of runners are into that kind of stuff and will listen to podcasts and things, but there's like different levels, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm like into this more than most people, you know? I'm just continually wanting to learn more and share more. And so, you know, I think the last time we had talked, I would say I was coaching running to some degree even before that, but I finally was like, okay, I kind of have to put the stake in the ground and like say I'm a coach and really start that process and figure out what that looks like. That's changed a little bit over time. Probably the biggest change for me over the last year would be, so like I mentioned before, I work with Patrick Reagan is my coach. He's a professional ultra runner. You know, he kind of specializes in that flat, fast stuff, as well. He's a sponsored Hoka athlete and that kind of stuff. But, so I had been working with him for maybe a year as my coach. And he knew that I coached as well. And so we just started having conversations about what would it look like if we kind of joined together and create a small coaching group. And so another athlete that he coaches, a woman by the name of Nicole Monet, she's been on the 100K like national team and, you know, going to world champs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, she's ran a 14:02 mile herself. So she's, it was the same time, Camille broke the world record. So it was kind of overshadowed by that. But it was like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, it's one of the top female 100 mile times of all time, you know? Mm-hmm. So she's an amazing athlete, but, she's a physical therapist herself. And so the three of us, kind of joined forces as coaches and have a coaching group. And so we made that shift. I can't quite remember exactly the date, but it's not quite been a year, but maybe getting close to a year ago. And really what that did is kind of opened me up to a little more exposure, nationally, especially, you know, ultra running is such a niche sport anyway, but then the athletes that are looking for coaching is even a smaller group than that. And trying to, you know, so trying to get the ball rolling a little bit as a new coach, it was really helpful. And just to have, you know, an experienced coach to, you know, ask questions and things like that, you know, it's kind of how that works anyway, is you end up, you know, as you progress as a coach, it's like, you kind of want to have your mentors and, you know, people that you're able to work with and ask questions with and learn from and vice versa. So it's been a really great time being able to work with them. We've gone to some races, some big races like Javelina last year. I was able to go and be with them and just support athletes from our group. You know, we've gone to, you know, some other big races like that, where we're able to go out and, you know, be together as coaches and coach our athletes. And so, you know, that's been really fun. But yeah, so that's been kind of a shift, over this last, you know, year in terms of, you know, kind of the ultra side and just opening up my coaching more like nationally, and, you know, kind of switching into that. But I've kind of also, in a lot of ways grown and doubled down on like the local community and like what I'm involved with locally. So, you know, again, probably mentioned before, but 816 Run Club, is a nonprofit running club that I helped start, January of 2020. It's a great time to start something.
Yeah. Well, I guess I missed the fact that you were one who started that. I'd heard about, you know, the 816 Run Club, but I missed that. So sorry, I apologize.
No, that's totally okay. I, so, you know, It was kind of birthed out of the old running store that was in Westport. Okay.
And that's what I was remembering, that there was a group.
Yeah, Run 816.
Run 816, yeah. Yep. And I'd seen that. So that's, I kind of assumed that that's where it started.
And yeah, Nick and Tracy Pig had the running store. And as they were deciding to get out of retail, you know, they... It was just kind of a transformative community in my running journey. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, I was like, well, if there's anything I can do to kind of keep this going, you know, they just had, you know, a really large Sunday group run, you know, long run. And so me and a couple other people, Nick and Tracy were involved kind of at the beginning, but a couple people that had really just, you know, didn't want the community to die, so to speak, were involved as well. And yeah, we started a nonprofit, and it's a standalone, you know, group now. And so we kept it going. I mean, keeping something like that moving through COVID was not an easy thing. We shut down for a few months, you know, right there at the beginning. Then we were meeting strictly outdoors, like no hanging out, mm-hmm. you know, did that for a long time. And now we're finally, I feel like we're really getting the ball rolling in the direction we hoped it would, even that first year of 2020. We're a couple years later, but, you know, it's an amazing crew. It's all volunteer based. So, like, we're still setting up long routes, which I think is really unique in the run club kind of world. I have yet to find another running club that operates the way ours does, where it's completely volunteer led. But we're setting up, I mean, this Saturday will be, I think it's a 13 or 14 mile route with signs, and it's a loop. So it's not even out and back. Sometimes they are out and backs, but it's a loop around the city that has signs pointing you at every turn. So do you turn left? Do you turn right?
Oh, wow.
You
know? Okay.
Yeah. So we have signs for every turn. So a brand new runner, somebody could come in from out of town, never even been in Kansas City, and run the course that we have marked. I mean, it's basically like a race course, you know, and we'll have coolers at every 2 miles. So you have, you know, the aid stations there, you know, mm-hmm. so we put coolers out, mark the routes. And then we give kind of helpful tips on how you can cut the route short if you want. So say you're, you only want to run 4 miles, you know, you can run out to the first cooler and then run back. Or mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, on loops, we'll say, hey, just turn left at this street and you'll cut the course, you know, shorter, that kind of thing. But yeah, so we mark long routes that kind of progress towards fall marathon season. So we'll get up to marking 18, 20 mile routes, you know, in the fall. But yeah, so that's been an amazing thing, really trying to help grow that and, you know, and keep that community going. And, you know, there was a lot of time where it was like me and two other people doing all the work, but now it's like a self-sustaining, you know, volunteer-led. We have route teams, you know, that rotate every 4 weeks. We have, you know, hats and stickers and shirts that, you know, volunteer designs and does all that. So it's a really fun crew that's really passionate about the run community and that kind of thing. And that's fed into, you know, opportunities for me to kind of, you know, like basically with that running club, I never want it to feel like people need to hire me as a coach. Mm-hmm. Like my priority with the running club is to invite brand new runners and help give them, you know, that community and just, you know, hey, if you want to start running, here's what to do, mm-hmm. you know, and have that be completely accessible, completely free, like open to anybody. But as the runners are around for a while and do end up developing and some of them do decide they want coaching, you know, I'm wanting to make that more available, through my coaching as well. And you know, for the people that do want that. So,
yeah. So what's the dynamic difference between having, I mean, you'd imagine local people, do they do in-person coaching and then the rest of it is online? I mean, what's the, you know, for somebody who's either local or online, of like, what can they expect from coaching?
Yeah. Yeah. No, good question. So in some ways, the training I do is all geared towards kind of the same format, which would be, you know, it's all online essentially. But with the local group, I do have just a lot more opportunities for them to come in and run, you know, run runs with right. me mm-hmm. or, you know, like I said, they could come, any of my local athletes can come to the, you know, run 8-1-6 runs and get in their long run and have face-to-face time that way. And, you know, if they have questions, obviously I want to answer those. So that does happen quite a bit. I also just started a Wednesday night speed group where it's kind of 8-1-6 run club plus Coach Randy kind of partnership between us, you know? And so it, you know, that's an opportunity for me to get some of my local athletes and do some speed sessions, you know, kind of Wednesday workout type speed sessions. But then also open that up to anybody that just wants to learn, hey, I don't, you know, I know I should probably be doing some kind of speed work, but I literally have no idea where to start, you know? And so I'm able to kind of point people in the right direction that way. So I think in that regard, local athletes, I'm not like meeting them on a set schedule or it's not required that they come to those runs mm-hmm. in any way, but it is an option for them to come and participate in some of those runs and get a little bit more face time in that regard. But I do try to have it like a full service, I guess you would say, custom coaching service, whether they come and participate in that or not. And for my remote athletes, you know, it's kind of the same thing. So I do use a program called Training Peaks essentially for programming. So it's kind of a calendar where I can put the workouts, you know, that they're going to need to do on each day. And, you know, I put in rest days, and if they're doing strength work, you know, we can put all that in there, and then they can sync it with their watch or whatever kind of tracking device that they're using, and it'll automatically upload those. So I can go back and look and evaluate, you know, long runs or workouts or, you know, that kind of thing and give feedback and stuff like that. I do, I'm kind of a, you know, when I say fully custom, that's basically taken into consideration where is somebody at? So looking at past training, mm-hmm. where is somebody trying to go? What's their goal race or their goal time?
Oh, just lost you.
Oh, did I disappear? Yeah.
You disappeared. Someone must have gone into like hibernation mode or something.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Let's see here. Taking in where they're coming from, where they're wanting to go, and then, you know, what their life is like in the middle, right? Because it's like some people can train 5 days, 6 days a week. Some people are like, I can only train 3 days or 4 days, or I have this job and we have to work around that, and I travel, you know, every 2 weeks, and I, you know, so it's mm-hmm. like looking at all those factors, I help develop training plans based on, you know, their life and where they're at, what they're trying to do. And then I only, you know, I update that stuff once a week. So it's like, I'll do a week and then we always check in typically it's like on a Monday schedule where I check in with my athletes and, hey, where are we at? This is what we did. And this is what we got to get done this next week kind of a thing, you know? So it really is trying to be really building towards their goals, but taking in kind of life and all the messiness and challenge that comes with it to get there. So yeah, that's what it looks like.
And they set their own goals, I'd imagine. So that they would have their own reason for whatever they're trying to accomplish when they feel like, you know, they just need to get a little bit, you know, a little bit stronger, a little bit faster, a little bit better, or, you know, going to go for a distance they haven't done before. So is that kind of what you're saying? They get to tell you, here's what I want to do, and you create a plan for them.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so some athletes are like, I want to run 100-miler for the first time. And so we'll evaluate and kind of build towards that. Or, you know, some athletes, because it's not all, about half of my athletes are road athletes, and then about half of them are ultra distance and trail athletes. So, you know, so it may be a fairly experienced half marathon, you know, kind of specialist, and they're wanting to really hit a particular time goal, you know, at, you know, a race in the future. And so, yeah, so it is self-defined. I do have a couple athletes that I probably like they're just kind of, you know, every once in a while somebody's like floats, you know, and as a coach, I got to say, hey, like, what are we working on here? Yeah. You know? So that does happen occasionally where maybe I need to set a goal, to kind of keep somebody motivated, keep somebody going. But for the most part, you know, it's, yeah, somebody's kind of come in with goals in mind and you know, a lot of that, especially in the ultra world, tend to be multi-year goals. You know, they're, hey, I want to run my first 50K this year, but ultimately I want to run 100-miler. I just don't know when that's going to be, mm-hmm. you know, that might be a couple years from now kind of goals. So.
Yeah. And you can't just decide to run 100-miler, you know, next year or next month. You know, so
it
doesn't work too well.
Yeah. There's kind of some milestones we want to check off ideally, you know, on the journey. So.
Well, and you talk about the guys who are floating, having a coach would also help you not fade away because it's real easy to set a goal, achieve it. And I mean, oftentimes after you've achieved a goal is a more critical time in your life than it is when you're working toward a goal. And so
it's
easy to just say, oh, check that off my bucket list. And then you end up, you know, back, find yourself 2 years from now sitting on the couch eating potato chips, 50 pounds heavier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's really, I do think, and that brings up a great point because I do think a lot of athletes look at what I do or what coaches do in general as mostly kind of the training plan and that kind of thing. I think when athletes that have worked with good coaches, you know, before they realize that it's actually a lot more than that. It is more on the, you know, kind of encouragement and motivation side of things, keeping you on track, keeping you from not doing too much, kind of protecting you from injury a little bit from yourself. But then also sometimes you need a coach to help push you to do enough, you know, in certain seasons. Mm-hmm. And so it is a lot more than just a training plan. And like you mentioned, it's like, okay, well, if we run a really hard marathon or a really hard 50K or a long ultra, like we need some rest, you know, we need to let our bodies really rest. So like my coaching may not look like a whole lot in those week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks following a big race, but I'm going to hopefully make sure that you're resting, you know, but then it's like, yeah, get like you're saying and like getting back to it. It's like, hey, we don't need to go 3 months, you know, or however long, you know, and so it is a great time and a really critical time, I think, to have somebody in your corner looking at what are you doing, checking in. It's a huge help because any of this, whether you're trying to be faster at a road distance or just check off some of these really monstrous long, you know, 50 mile, 100K, 100 mile or beyond. Now the races go so long. But
oh, yeah. Now, Cocodone is what, 320 miles?
Yeah. Well,
is it that far? Is it?
No, Cocodone is about 250.
250. Okay.
But, 250. You know, like, either way, yeah. I don't know.
There's one in California that was 310 miles. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
I think it goes up to the top of Mount Shasta or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. So it's just like, you know, just absurd distance. So like that takes years of like consistent training. You know, obviously you're going to have builds that build up and then you race and then, you know, you need rest and recovery and then, but you got to start building back up and like, you know, and whatever that looks like, even if it's just checking off, you know, completing those races is a massive achievement in and of itself, regardless if you're trying to push time. So, you know, being able to continually build, I think, is one of the biggest benefits of working with a coach to keep you as healthy as possible during that time, but, you know, continually building. So.
Right. Right. And having a plan rather than just, going out and winging it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ultra runners are very famous for just winging it.
And yeah. So. And I know some athletes that wing it like all the time and are amazing athletes, you know? It works for some people for sure. I would say the vast majority of people, would benefit from some sort of like support.
Everybody would benefit. You know, there's a benefit for coaching for most people. And so, just having someone outside, like you were talking about, when you were in the race, you weren't able to really see what was happening to you. And you said, you know, as a coach, you'd be able to look at your situation and go, you really need to fix this.
Yeah.
And so you're having somebody from the outside look at that. Well,
thank
you a lot, Randy. I appreciate you being with me. I've got the bridge questions to ask you before you go.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
First question is, what is your must-have piece of gear when you're running?
Must-have piece of gear. That's a good one. I think, you know, that's probably changed a little bit over time, but I do work with a company called Ultraspire, and that's who I use for my handhelds and hydration stuff. And I mean, I really enjoy their handhelds, and I race pretty much with their handhelds every race I do. But I think even more importantly than that, like, I've learned to love, they have a belt called the Element. It's just like a little waist belt that has a, you know, it's a clasp and you can kind of cinch it down. And it's almost like a fanny pack looking kind of piece of gear, but the belt kind of sits on your low back. Mm-hmm. And I think I would say that's my must have piece of gear, because I wear that every training run I go on, every race. It's just a super versatile piece of gear that, I mean, I can shove a soft flask in it if I need just a little bit of water, you know, and I don't want to carry handhelds or anything. You know, I can put my phone in it. I could put a GoPro in it if I wanted, you know, whatever nutrition I need. So I think that's what I would say is kind of my must have piece of gear.
Okay.
I use it every day.
So, yeah. Well, cool. Second question is, what is the strangest thing you've seen out running on the trail?
Strangest thing. Well, running, I mean, on trail would be.
Or on trail or street. Since you're a road runner, most of the time it's, you know, the strange things that we've seen in the woods is if you're a trail runner. But yeah, there's plenty of strange things out on the road too.
I mean, I train in the city here in Midtown, Midtown, Kansas City. And so I've seen a whole lot of strange things out on road runs. You know, I train a lot on the road. That's a good one. I think, let me see here. Good question. I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of, and this is just part of living in the city, but, you know, not only like kind of homeless, but like, man, I've ran in places down around the river and stuff where I've seen some really elaborate like shacks, like in the woods kind of thing, you know, and stuff like that, where it's like, man, this is impressive. This is like a full on cabin that somebody's built, you know, in the side of the hill.
Out of stuff that they found, right?
Yeah. It's just stuff that they found, you know, so that's pretty strange, I think, for most people. You know, out in the woods, I mean, I remember one time, local trail, Swope Park, over here where I trained quite a bit. I mean, there was a, you know, some kind of giant, like really old school, computer on a cart kind of thing. But this was like, I'm talking like, it must've been from the 80s or 90s, like big, like clunky, but it was like way out in the middle of like way off the road. It's not like somebody just threw this thing out of their truck on the side of the road. Like we're like a mile in on the trail on a pretty technical, like hilly section of trail. And it was like way up in there. And so, you know, that might trail. Something out of place, you know,
something out of place. Yeah. No electricity out there. You know, it wasn't like someone was out there using it.
What? How did that get there? And why in the world did somebody go through the effort to drag that up there? But
those are kinds of things you find on the trail, and it really is like, that's just a strange thing. Third question is, what is a word or phrase that sums up your philosophy of running in life?
Word or phrase that sums up my philosophy. Good one. I think, you know, a phrase might be something like, you know, get after it. Like, that's what I tell a lot of my athletes. And I think the reason it really is like a phrase that kind of sums up my, you know, coaching, my running and my life is that I think for, it's not about the results. It's just really about really getting in and starting or getting in and just getting the work done, you know, getting to it. And so I tell people all the time, just, hey, like all you got to do is just get after it. You know, if you can just get after it, the rest will take care of itself. And so I think that's kind of a phrase that comes to mind. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thanks again. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah. Thank you, Eric, for your time. I always enjoy chatting with you.
So after Randy and I shut off the main recorder that I use to record my podcasts, it's a website that records and then I can download. I left my backup local recorder running, and Randy and I continued to chat about odds and ends, and then we got back into talking about some running topics. So I am adding this content as a bonus to the regular podcast. You could call it maybe a director's cut if it were a video, but it was worth listening to. Hope you enjoy this continued conversation that Randy and I had.
Are you there?
Yeah. I don't know. Your phone just decides it's had enough for a while. It wants a rest.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it was one of those experiences where I literally was just hoping. I knew where I wanted to be, and you know, and I remember even my wife and my friend who was pacing me. You know, they were talking to me in the morning and about because the weather changed and the snow and all that, and I was just like, well, you know, it's going to affect other people more than me because it's just, you know, I already knew it's just something that I was going to have to deal with, you know, and just kind of resolve to just be like, well, everybody has to run in it just the same. So we'll see. And knowing, though, that some people weren't going to handle it well, you know, and sure enough, it was one of those things that, you know, we had a pretty fast, I mean, there was probably 10 people in the lead pack that were going way faster than they should, you know? And so I ran with them a few miles just trying to get an idea of, you know, what people's time goals were and, you know, all that. And I ended up probably mile 5 or 6 letting like 10 people go. Only one of which, Phil Young, who ended up winning, he's won the last couple of years, but, you know, that I knew was, you know, had the experience to run at the pace we were running. So I dialed into where my pace needed to be, which I wanted it to be about 8 minute per mile pace. And, you know, and I ended up catching every single one of those guys. I mean, in my mind, I was like, well, I hope I'm passing these guys at between 50 and 100, you know, 50 mile, 100K kind of thing. And passed them all between 20 and 30 miles because they just like were falling off one by one, like pretty early on, you know, but that's what like the, you know, the weather and inexperience, you know, ambition coming from a road marathon background and never have ran, you know, you're like, well, how hard could it be to run 7:30 pace when I can run, I can run my marathon at 6 minute pace, you know, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's hard.
Yeah. It's hard. Different. It's hard. Yeah.
So, yes. And then I, you know, so I ended up getting in second place probably around the 50K mark, but I didn't know that. My wife, like nobody told me that for quite some time. So, I was.
Well, it's good you were able to work through all of that stuff before you knew that you were.
Yeah, before I knew, yeah.
Because that could have derailed you. You're like, oh, yeah, well, I can keep pushing.
Yeah. You know, and so, you know, it's one of those things that, like, you know, I mean, it's funny, too. I didn't really go into this on the recording, but, you know, around that, you know, 65 to 70 mile mark where I was making shifts in my nutrition, but it still wasn't fully, like, resolved. You know, it wasn't really – and you never catch up, but it's like, you know, it improved slightly, I would say that.
Well, some people never recover. And so, I mean, yeah, I was kind of surprised when you said you came back. I was like, well, that's pretty good, because I've heard the stories go the other way. It's like, oh, yeah, I could never catch up.
Yeah. But I remember having thoughts where it was like, I just wanted to be done, you know, which is every race of that distance. Mm-hmm. You hit points where you're like, why am I doing this? What, like, why do I keep doing this to myself? I just want to be done. But I was really like checking in with my body, and it was like I had no excuse. My body felt better than it ever had at that distance. You know, I was still running incredibly well. Like, I couldn't even pinpoint like a particular body part and say that hurts, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like I had no excuse to quit, and I was almost like mad at myself about it. Yeah. You know, I was just like,
well, I mean, that's, you know, to tell people, you know, you've got to have the mental side of it too. Because your mind will, yeah, your mind is very integral to your success.
Yeah, no doubt. So,
because a lot of times it's people are having to convince themselves to keep going because of their body, but. Yeah, it was kind of interesting that you said everything was fine, and your mind was still like, oh, I'm ready to be done.
Yeah, I still want to be done, you know, for whatever reason. It's just a long time, you know. But, you know, for those reasons, I think I haven't 100% decided, but I think I'm going to go back. If it's not Tunnel Hill, it's going to be a similar course, like Hennepin or Brazos Bend.
Yeah, I've heard Brazos Bend is a good. Although this year in Brazos Bend, the humidity was so bad.
Yeah, it was out of control. Like, yeah, it was super hot. Cody and Hans went and raced, you know, out of Brazos.
Yeah,
was going to try and put down a fast time, and ended up. I mean, he still ran an incredibly good race considering the temperature, but. But
this was not the year to be trying for a speed. Yeah, a personal best for speed.
Hot,
yeah.
You know. So we'll see. Yeah, Brazos runs that risk. You know, Tunnel Hill runs the risk of being too cold and, you know, that kind of thing. So we'll see. You know, it might be something like that. But I know I left enough time out there that I'd like to, I don't know, who knows, maybe set a goal of running sub 14. It'd be awesome to see 13 on the clock.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That would be, that'd be quite an accomplishment.
Even if it's 13, 59, 59, you know,
yeah. you still came under that.
Yeah. That's so cool. We'll see.
So what is your best for 100? Was it Tunnel Hill?
Yeah,
was that
the best? Tunnel Hill, 14:29.
14:29. Yeah. Okay. That's a respectable time.
Yeah. It's, you know, yeah, it was great. I mean, I really did, you know, I think that comes out to like it's like an 8:40 average or an 8:30, mm-hmm. somewhere in there average for the whole race. Which means that with aid stops and whatnot, you know, you're running a lot of 8 minute miles.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a lot of 8 minute miles. Yeah. Cause the aid stops are kept in there.
Yeah. You know, so we'll see. It's, you know, I do think I'm physically capable of running faster. It's one of those things that you got to really start, you know, having a lot of things go in your favor, mm-hmm. To, you know, keep improving. So,
yeah, well, that's the challenge of 100 mile distance is, I mean, you know, the weather, you know, there's so many variables that, when things align and everything comes together. That's really a special time to be able to get that, and just to be, you know, physically you have to train to be ready for that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You got to be ready. You got to have your body ready to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And everything else has to come together.
Yeah. So if you keep doing it, if you're always ready, you know, keep doing it, you know, you'll get those times when it all comes together. And I've heard some runners who've said, oh yeah, it's just magical. You know?
Yeah. So, I have yet to experience that.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that either.
Yeah, I've had some great results, but it's like, it seems like a fight and a, you know, and still seems like so many things going wrong, which is the nature of the sport.
And the thing is, you're hoping that, you know, things go, you know, things might go wrong, but you hope that, you know, that doesn't cascade into just, you know,
yeah, suck an absolute implosion.
Yeah.
Well, and I mentioned it a little bit, but obviously with time, we can't go into everything. But I did run Kettle Moraine 100 in June, mm-hmm. of last year. And it was one of those experiences where I think due to a lot of things,
kind of led into this, but I mean, I was coming into the aid station at like mile 55 and like my quads were like completely blown. Like I couldn't even hardly walk downhill anymore. And like, it just like happened that fast. I went from like running really well to about, there was like a 4 or 5 mile stretch there where things went downhill real fast. And my quads were just like wrecked. And you know, and it's not it's not a flat course, but it's not particularly hilly either.
Right, yeah.
You know, and so I don't know what it was. It was, I literally, looking back, I couldn't pinpoint any one thing. I think it was a combination of a lot of little things that I had done in training and just on the day. But I thought I was going to quit. I was really upset because I was just like, man, I'm going to have to drop. Like, I don't know how I can do this. Waited for a while, talked to my coach, ate some food, decided to, I knew some other runners out on course. I was like, well, I'll just wait and till somebody I know comes through and maybe I'll try and hang with them for a while. And then I did meet up with a girl that I actually coach, came through. And so we went, you know, we went out together, and then she ended up dropping at like mile 64. So then I met up with Nick Foster. Mm-hmm. You probably know him. So Nick was literally, as she's like telling me, she's like, okay, I'm dropping at this next aid station. Like, there's nothing you can say to get me to come out. He's coming out of the aid station. So I was like, all right, cool, I'm going to jump in with him. So I jumped in with Nick, and then Chris, his brother Chris, jumped in because he was going to pace him, you know. And by this point, we're kind of mostly power hiking. We're not really running much. We're running a little bit, but like mostly power hiking. And Nick ends up getting super bad chafing, which leads to him not taking any hydration nutrition in because he's like in such bad pain. He just can't get anything in. And that was a big downhill spiral pretty fast. And, you know, that was like mile 75 maybe. Mm-hmm. And I just told Chris, I was like, hey, Chris, the next crew that comes through that like looks like they're moving pretty good, I'm going to jump in with them and let you guys can figure out what you need to do for Nick. And it was two ladies. It ended up being a runner and her pacer. And they were just kind of being loud and laughing. By this point, it's like midnight, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I jump in with them, and we end up power hiking all the way to the finish, which was 10 a.m. the next day. So I ended up running the first 50 miles in about 8 hours, and then I did the second 50 miles in about 20 hours. So it was a 28 hour finish, which is still a respectable time on a 100 miler.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Comparatively to the majority of people, but it was a vastly different, you know, first half, second half. But it was a blast because I got to experience really what a lot of kind of, you know, the majority of athletes that I coach and the majority of what people that attempt 100 milers really experience, and, you know, spending more time at aid, mm-hmm. eating lots of different stuff, and, you know, getting to chat with people and really have that experience because I'm normally just so tunnel vision into
right.
the. Yeah. You know, if, beat aspect.
And if you're competitive, you're, you know, you're spending half the time of the course that a lot of people do. And, you know, to have to go for that long. I mean, that's there's a different I don't know, experience for your body,
sure.
for the being that, you know, to go for that long.
Yeah. And I would almost say, like, I've said it before, but actually having experienced it, I'm like, man, I honestly don't know which is harder. Like, I think being out there for 28 or 30 hours is harder mm-hmm. in some ways than what I do, you know? Like, I'm just like, man, that was so hard to just be out there that long.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, props to a lot of you guys for, you know, knowing that's where you're headed, you know, and mm-hmm. like, and that's the experience that you always have, you know, because yeah, it was tough in its own way,
yeah.
But it was a blast to be able to experience that, and, you know, lots of lessons learned to be able to, you know, share with my athletes and stuff. So it's
yeah. So have you ever thought about doing a last man standing?
You know, I have tossed that around a little bit, and we didn't even get a chance to mention this either, but are you familiar with Midwest Endurance? They're kind of a newer race group.
Yes, I've heard of it.
Mile Zero and Ultra Palooza. That's some of their races.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Yeah, so Jenny, who's one of the race directors, it's two ladies that are race directors. I coach Jenny, and so now I'm doing some coaching work kind of with their race group. So like they, like athletes that run their races, I'm kind of doing some like talks and some tips and things like that. But she's starting it's a brand new race, but they're doing a last man standing actually in Mill Creek Park, right on the plaza, this year as a new race. And so, it's going to be in August, which could be incredibly hot. It could be okay.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know. But that one's kind of piqued my interest. It's something I've thought about for a year or two, to maybe try, but that seems to be right in a time where I could actually do it, and go for it. So we'll see. That I am kind of interested, but it's almost one of those things that it's like, it looks so bad that you're kind of, it piques your interest in that way. Not from that looks like something I would really love to do. It's like,
I talked last week. Well, actually the episode came out today, the Ultra Running Guys, they have a podcast. And they put on a couple of races, and one of their races, they call it the Final Countdown. So it's the last man standing, but I can't remember I can't remember the length of the course, but each loop you subtract a minute of time from.
I've seen some races like that. Yeah,
I'm looking at it. Yeah, you that would that would keep the. It would keep the race from going 50 hours like a lot of those last man standings do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it definitely would help cut down on it time wise a little bit. But yeah, it's a whole different ball game. And
yeah.
So we'll see. And I also did go out to Desert Solstice, which is a big track invitational down in Phoenix area. Uh-huh. So they'll do like a 100-miler or the 24-hour.
Track race.
On the track.
On the track, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of in that same category for me where it's like, really amazing weather almost every year at that race. But I'm like, man, I just don't know if I can wrap my head around yet running on the track. I know. Are you familiar with Jeff Browning? He's
an ultra
runner. He's a little older. He's like mid-50s, but he's still routinely. He's a big mountain runner. Okay. Routinely. Podium at big races, like big races, and wins a lot of stuff still. And so he's a mountain runner, and he decided he was going to do this track race. And I remember he came around at like the 3-hour mark, and I was like, how's it going, Jeff? And he was just like, I'm already hating life, why, why did I do this? So it's kind of in that same vein. I don't know. It looks so bad. I'm like, maybe I have to give it a try and just, see how much I can deal with terrible stuff. But yeah.
I'm considering doing Across the Years this year.
Yeah.
And
kind of in that same.
It's the same thing. It's a mile course, and you run. Yeah, yeah. So, I like hills. I like to have hills and rocks and roots, and that's just flat. And I'm like, that's another, so I've got two things that I'm going to have to wrap my head around.
And I mean, that's the challenge with like a race like Tunnel Hill is that, it's a couple different out and backs. You basically do two out and backs that make 50 miles, and then you do those same two out and backs again for the 100-miler. But I mean, you're effectively running in a straight line with no elevation, and it's just trees on both sides. It's like literally feels like you're just running in a tunnel that never changes.
Yeah. I did it was a Rails to Trails down for whatever the trail that goes south of Ottawa, Kansas.
Oh yeah.
And
was it Prairie Spirit or
no? It was during COVID, and it was one that Dan from the Trail Nerds put together it was an unofficial. We published it to people and said, "Oh yeah, we're going to just show up and run." And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
because I think we were still on lockdowns back then. But
right,
But I ran on a team, so I had I think a 13 mile section. And I was just like, this is like a treadmill. This is because it's like.
Except at least on a treadmill, you could prop a screen up or something.
Oh yeah,
you
know, yeah.
it's almost worse.
And it looked like a gradual uphill, but I couldn't tell for sure. And it was just and trees on both sides, and you could see the person ahead of me that looked to be like a quarter mile away, and I'm like and so, but it was just.
Yeah, never changes. Yeah.
I think that a straight like that would be hard. I think I could do a loop course, but running straight like that for 100 miles would be that would be the hardest thing I can imagine.
Yeah, I didn't put enough forethought into how boring that race was going to be and really like prepare my mind for it, I mean, thankfully some of the aid stations were like 3 or 4 miles apart, and so my wife and my friend Emily and then my brother-in-law, they were crewing, and my boys were there. So it was like, and they made it to every single aid station.
Oh, wow.
So
that's good.
They were working. but it was like, without them, it would have been even that much worse, but even still, there was one that was like a 7 mile stretch, and I mean, I'm moving pretty good. So that's like less than an hour, but it was just like the most lonely hour of my life, why is this so boring, so bad, but made it through, obviously. But yeah, it's such a crazy thing that we do.
There's a lot of opportunities for a variety of crazy things. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. My online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.